The United Soccer Coaches is pleased to bring you the United Soccer Coaches podcast with Dean Linke. The United Soccer Coaches podcast is released the third Thursday of each month. If you have a guest you want featured on the United Soccer Coaches podcast, please reach out to Sarah Wilbur with suggestions, questions, and input. Her email is swilbur@unitedsoccercoaches.org. That's S-W-I-L-B-U-R at unitedsoccercoaches.org. In addition, if you have a company that would like to sponsor the podcast or run advertisements in the show, please reach out to partners at unitedsoccercoaches.org. That is partners at unitedsoccercoaches.org. Founded in 1941 and based in Kansas City, Missouri, the United Soccer Coaches has grown into one of the world's largest soccer coaches organization that serves members at every level of the game. United Soccer Coaches works every day to inspire coaches and ignite their passion for the game so they pass it on to their players and others in the soccer community. Dean Linke is approaching 30 years as a television play-by-play broadcaster, reporter, and host. In addition, Dean has a long history as a U.S. soccer employee and ambassador, including serving as the senior press officer for the 1994 U.S. Men's World Cup team. Dean took the leap to the broadcast booth with Major League Soccer's Colorado Rapids for the inaugural season of Major League Soccer in 1996. The former television voice of the NSCAA College Soccer Game of the Week on Fox Soccer Channel has served as the voice of the association for more than 20 years. So let's get the show started. To do that, here's Dean Linke.
I am Dean Linke. This is the United Soccer Coaches Podcast, and this show is dedicated to youth soccer, and we have four big timers that are involved in youth soccer. We kick off with the president and CEO of the ECNL, Christian Lavers. Then we're joined by the commissioner of the Girls Academy, Trish Hughes. After Trish, we hear from Mark Franklin, who is the general manager of USYS National League. And then we visit with the technical director for U.S. Club Soccer, Ross Pauley. And because October is Cancer Awareness Month, Felicity Day, who is a board director, a longtime coach educator, is taking the lead with the partnership between United Soccer Coaches and the American Cancer Society as we put a red card to cancer. And Felicity Day will wrap up the show, a show that starts after this message from United Soccer Coaches.
Calling all soccer coaches, players, and fans. Get ready for the ultimate soccer experience as we celebrate 50 years of the United Soccer Coaches Convention in Philadelphia, PA, January 14th to 17th, 2026. This is the can't-miss event of the year where education, innovation, and the passion for the game come together in one incredible location. Whether you're a coach looking to level up or a business professional in the soccer world, this convention has something for you. We're talking about world-class educational sessions led by top experts in the game, a full exhibit hall showcasing the latest in soccer gear, technology, and the business of soccer, and so much more. You'll have the chance to network, discover new trends, and experience everything the soccer world has to offer. Celebrate 50 years of growth, achievement, and community in Philadelphia. Join us January 14th to 17th, 2026 in Philadelphia, PA for the United Soccer Coaches Convention. Visit UnitedSoccerCoachesConvention.com to register now. See you in Philly.
Kicking off this week's United Soccer Coaches podcast with the CEO and president of the ECNL, Mr. Christian Lavers, because this entire show is dedicated to youth soccer. And without question, the Elite Clubs National League has established itself as one of the premier leagues in the country and, quite frankly, in the world. There, I said it. And I've also said before that I think Christian Lavers is one of the smartest people I know in the game. I don't say that as a sycophant. I don't say that to get rolling, to hear him say nice things about me. I just think it's a fact. I like the way you go about your business, Christian, and I'm honored that you're kicking off this week's United Soccer Coaches podcast.
I always appreciate being here talking with you, Dean. You always make me feel better about myself when I hang up as well, so I'll take that as a positive. But looking forward to talk about all things youth soccer, wherever you want to take this, and excited for it.
You know, I call a lot of games. In fact, I think I'm calling eight in a row, and I've got one tonight and another one tomorrow night. And inevitably, there's always a player that played for the ECNL. And every once in a while, I'll have a producer say, you know, what is the ECNL? So then on the air, I'll say Elite Clubs National League. And we still got to do a little bit of that. But I think we're getting closer to a point where the ECNL is the ECNL and everybody knows it's the ECNL. Is that fair?
I would hope so. I mean, I think our mission is to provide the best youth sports experience in the world. And that has grown over our now 17 years, I believe we're in now, of history. I mean, this hasn't happened overnight. It's just been a consistent build. And we, you know, we'd be lying if we said we had the vision for what this organization could become back in 2009 when we started it. But we've been really, really fortunate and blessed to have really great people working in the league. We've got a fantastic team. And at the base and foundation of it all, we have hundreds of exceptional clubs led by really great club leaders who continue to work to make the sport better. And what we try and do is serve and support them and then add what we can in terms of resource and leadership and opportunity to make the sport for those aspiring youth players better and better. And it's an unbelievable thing to see how many of them, thousands of them, have gone on, tens of thousands probably over 17 years, that have gone on to play college soccer, that are going on beyond college soccer now. I think we were looking at the U17 Women's World Cup, which kicks off this week. There are, I think, close to 40 ECNL players that are playing across 6 or 7 different countries in that World Cup, which is unbelievable. And then on the men's side, we've just got a growing drumbeat of players that are moving on into college. And you know how hard it is on the college men's game with the number of international players that are there. But that's not stopping these guys from chasing their dreams. And you're going to see more and more of these ECNL alums in college and beyond on the boys' side as well.
You know, it's interesting. You often see at the United Soccer Coaches Convention, which I understand you're going to be at. Look forward to seeing you there. And I also look forward to seeing you at the ECNL Coaches Symposium and AGM. But there's often been talk of, you know, scribbling on a napkin, kind of a formation or a game plan. I say that as a segue to how this all came together. Christian, can you take us back to how this all started and who were the people that were kind of in the room, and boom, now here we are.
This goes back. I mean, I think what really changed youth soccer in so many ways was the creation of the Development Academy back in 2007, which I've analogized to throwing a grenade into a room and sort of disrupting the room and making it possible for people to build a new structure. The Federation started that on the boys' side. We jumped into the void on the girls because at the time there was no interest, to be honest, by anyone to do what we all believed was necessary on the girls' side as well, which was create a platform for better games between clubs and to allow more training and better competition and things that ultimately drive improvement. And we believe 100% in the value of competition. It's one of our core values that competition needs to be embedded in everything. And we embrace that as a coach, you embrace that as a team at a team level. When you talk about players competing for spots and competing for time, we embrace that as a team level within the league. We embrace that as a club level in terms of pathways for clubs to prove themselves on the field. But we sat in a room in 2009, said there was a need to do some things better. And we had the support of 40 clubs in our first year, 40 clubs on the girls' side, 3 genders, and said, let's try something with little baby steps of a handful of games a year and a 5-year plan on how to expand that. We got our 5-year plan done in 3 years, which I think August of 2011 was the first year that the top girls clubs stepped out of other league competition to focus purely on the ECNL. When they stopped playing in the USYS State Cup regional national progression. And then we've just grown unbelievably from there to expand in numbers, to expand into the regional league, which provides opportunity for even more players and a pathway for clubs, and is a fantastic competition in and of its own right at this point. We added the boys, which has grown incredibly quickly. The boys is actually a bigger platform now in terms of size than the girls ECNL. And we are going very, very strongly now into what they would say zone one, which is the foundation age groups of U12 and below, with a goal here, again, not to do anything that's not age and stage appropriate for the players, but to try and improve the environment of the players, coaches, clubs, families that are in these young age groups as they start to become a little bit more serious, maybe, or a little bit more committed to soccer as a sport that they want to play. If your first years, 6, 7, 8 are kind of taking a test of soccer and sticking your toe in the water and seeing what you like, by the time they're 9, 10, 11, 12, players are starting to say, hey, this is something that inspires me, that I'm excited about, that I have ambitions about. That's when kids usually start to feel that way. And we're going to try and do what we can to improve what occurs in that space now as well.
You're a lawyer, so you have this big advanced brain, but you kind of knew right away that your heart was really kind of initially on the sidelines, and now you're back on the sidelines coaching some of your four kids with your beautiful wife, which is pretty awesome as well. But what was the tipping point? I love Malcolm Gladwell, and I love that book. What was the tipping point for Christian Labors to say, yeah, I'm a lawyer, but I'm better served in this sport that I love so much?
Well, I mean, I appreciate your compliments there. What I would say is yes, I did practice law for about 7.5 years. And I was at that stage in law where those people in law will know this, but there's two different careers in law. And one is being a great lawyer and one is controlling a great book of business. And the lawyers that are really, really successful have a lot of clients. They control a book of business. But that skill set's not necessarily correlated with being great at practicing law. And somewhere around that stage in your law career, around 7 years, maybe a little earlier, a little later, you have to transition into how do I get clients? And so I was going through this process in my legal career, which was I was going to have to start doing more networking and client and business development, which really didn't, it wasn't something I felt was great for me. It's not what I really wanted to do. And what clicked, and the reason I tell that story, is what was necessary to build a legal career in terms of constantly being out there to find out what's happening in business, who needs legal support, what you can do to support it, how do you change a business's trajectory from a legal perspective and support. I was doing all of that stuff naturally as a coach. I was always hanging around soccer coaches. I was always trying to figure out what the newest thing was, what the newest event was, the newest league, what was the best thing to do to improve as a coach, to provide more opportunity for players. And it sort of hit me that my heart was in soccer all the time. And what felt like work in a legal career did not feel like work in a soccer career. And so it was one of those, I've always sort of dreamed of having, I didn't want to look forward to Fridays and not look forward to Mondays. And I felt that is what happened for me in soccer, is that every day was, there's blessings and curses to that, right? But every day was a work day. Every day was something I could get up and be excited about. And then as I got more and more into coaching, and you're talking about me coaching my 8-year-old right now, which in some ways is the hardest coaching job I've ever had in terms of coaching kids in that age. And in some ways, the most rewarding, right? And that's probably a double side of the same coin. As I got more and more into coaching, I saw more and more opportunity to change the structure of the sport that we were in to make it better for the teams and the players. And I'm not the only one on that. There's a lot of coaches. We used to talk about the frequency with which soccer coaches would sit and talk about all the things that need to change. And all the things and the problems they had with existing structures, but nobody was ever able to marshal the resources, momentum, and support, willingness maybe, to push for that change. And sometime around 2009, we came together, a group of clubs came together and said, we can do something about this. And instead of being bystanders, we took a more direct control of the steering wheel and said, let's create the league and the platform that we want as soccer coaches. And it's, again, I never would have predicted where it's gone, but it's been a pretty exciting ride. I think we're doing really great things for the clubs in our league and to help the players in our league continue to have opportunity and for the sport to get better. And we're just going to continue to do that.
You're going to do that because you continue to hire great people. Can you kind of tell us that? We know that you started in 2009. As we're heading to the dawn of 2025 and into 2026, the ECNL has how many employees now? And these are some big time people.
Yeah, we're close to 50 full-time employees now and hundreds of part-time people that contribute at an event or in one form or another as per diem staff, whether that's marketing, operations, video, whatever it may be. But we have a phenomenal staff at the league. A lot of credit to that goes to Doug Bracken, our vice president, because he really manages the staff on a day-to-day basis. And what we've talked about is that when people come to work at the ECNL, we want that to be a career where they have opportunity to grow, opportunity to do more things, take on more, and ultimately be a part of the league for a very long time. We don't want positions that sort of they come in and they top off, and then you have to go outside or somewhere else in order to continue to progress as a talented achiever. And we've got great people from our leadership team on down, people that really believe in the mission. I think we're a very mission-driven organization. They believe in the values that we articulate every year with all of our clubs over and over. And you've heard me say that on a variety of different podcasts or other forums. But we have people that believe passionately in the power of youth sports and our ability to make the experience in youth sports better. And ultimately, and we say this, everybody says this to some degree in business, we try and practice it, that the success of your organization is going to be dependent on the quality of the people and the resources that you give them. And we have really, really good people in our league, and we try and continue to challenge them, empower them, attract more good people. And if we do that, we will continue to grow and continue to grow our impact on the sport.
Kicking off the special youth soccer edition of the United Soccer Coaches podcast with Christian Lavers, the president and CEO of the ECNL, Elite Clubs National League. But for me, Christian Lavers, the question is, when you think about the ECNL, if you only had one sentence to describe what it truly is, what words would you use?
Got one sentence to describe the whole league. Well, I'm going to go back. It may be repetitive, but I'm going to go back to our mission statement, which is to provide the best youth sports experience in the world. And the reason that's our mission is because it's very big, it's very ambitious. And when you think about what does that include, it includes everything on the field. It includes the experience of the family and the parent off the field. It includes the experience of the coach and the director and the administrator. It includes the referees. All of them are baked into what impacts a youth sports experience and how they are impacted by a youth sports experience. And we want to provide the best in the world. And that's every day what we get up and we focus on and saying, are we executing the way we need to on our existing programs? Are we ambitiously looking and creatively looking at what is needed in the sport to make it better, or how to make it better and create more opportunity for players? And are we constantly evaluating ourselves? And that's what we do every day.
And finally, and I'm looking forward to your answer because I know you will give it some thought. You know, every organization runs into some bumps. The United Soccer Coaches did run into some bumps. They're trying to percolate back up. One of the things that I've always loved about the association, either when it was called the NSCAA or now when it's called United Soccer Coaches, is I've always felt that they wanted to be a unifier. And as you know, in soccer, there's not always a whole lot of unification, right? Knowing that kind of sentiment, would you agree with that? And do you think it's important to have an association like United Soccer Coaches to act like a unifier and educate and connect people?
I've been a big fan of the United Soccer Coaches for a long time. I took a bunch of courses through United Soccer Coaches. I used to teach the director of coaching course that was there for a long time. I've been to a lot of different conventions with whether it's been in a role of watching sessions and seminars and learning, or more recently, a lot of my time there has been in just meetings and networking and connecting with people. But it's been a great organization. I think it's an important organization for the sport because our sport's got people with no shortage of opinions. And also, it's got a lot of competition within it. And like I said, competition is a good thing. And I think one of the things that makes competition healthy is when you can separate the competition on game day or on the weekend from the desire to work collaboratively and collectively to make the sport better Monday through Friday. And I think that's an important role United Soccer Coaches can help facilitate, is creating sort of a professional environment, a professional collegial environment about making the sport better while celebrating the fact that there are different paths and there are different opportunities and different organizations that serve the sport in different ways. And all of those things can be supportive of United Soccer Coaches and vice versa.
Christian Labors, the president and CEO of the ECNL, Elite Clubs National League, on this special edition dedicated to youth soccer. It's fitting that we kick off with Mr. Labors. Thank you so much for joining us on the United Soccer Coaches podcast.
Thank you, Dean. I appreciate it. And I'm looking forward to this year's event in January. And I'll see you there and many times before that, I hope.
Oh, it's great to spend time with Christian Labors. He is super, super sharp. Coming up next, a person who used to work for the association and now is the commissioner of the Girls Academy, talking about Patricia Hughes. We call her Trish Hughes, and we'll visit with Trish after this message.
Are you a soccer coach looking to take your game to the next level? Whether you're just starting out or you're seasoned pro, United Soccer Coaches has everything you need to succeed. As a member, you'll enjoy discounted education resources to improve your skills, connect with coaches' communities across the country, and gain access to our prestigious awards programming. Plus, you'll have the chance to attend our annual convention, an event you don't want to miss out on. Need extra protection? We've got you covered with general liability insurance, and you'll also enjoy exclusive discounts and opportunities from our trusted partners. Join United Soccer Coaches today and be part of a team that's dedicated to helping you grow as a coach and a leader. Sign up now at unitedsoccercoaches.org. Elevate your coaching. Elevate your game.
Welcome back to the United Soccer Coaches podcast, this month dedicated to the youth game. And we are covering pretty much all facets of youth soccer. Up next, it's the Girls Academy. And when you go to their site, it'll say, "Welcome to the Girls Academy, the only youth development platform focused on growing the female soccer player as both an athlete and a person. The voice of our players is the heart of the Girls Academy and helps shape everything we do." I like hearing that word heart because I know Trish Hughes has a huge heart. She is the commissioner of the Girls Academy, someone who I got to know during her time with United Soccer Coaches. And Trish, congrats on the job as commissioner, and thanks for being a part of this special edition of the United Soccer Coaches podcast.
Hey, Dean, good to be back. It's always a fun time when we get together. One of my favorite guys in the industry. So thank you for having us on and just allowing me the opportunity to speak about the Girls Academy.
You have a light to you right now, Trish. I feel like this role as the commissioner of the Girls Academy is one that you're enjoying and one that fits you.
Yeah, you know, I've been really fortunate. My many, many lenses, as you know, having been a player, I came to the US, had a somewhat of a small career with the national team, and then transitioned into being a head coach in the collegiate landscape, eventually athletic director, then onto United Soccer Coaches. So, and then now it's almost a full circle for me coming with the youth game, because obviously we sit as part of that pathway from youth to college, or the pro pathway in the YNT system. So it's all of my worlds coming together, and knowing that we, given our scale and scope, that we get to have a real big impact and shaping the youth landscape and certainly the women's game, and just to be able to be a part of that and know the impact is fantastic. So
I'm not surprised that one of your key messages when you go to the girlsacademyleague.com, again, that's girlsacademyleague.com, you talk about giving players a voice. You say the GA is different. Why? Unlike other youth sports leagues, the GA is built for the players and by the players, because their perspective help inform the overall mission. Our holistic athletes have a voice and a seat at the table to help shape the future of their league. It's time development isn't limited to just the soccer field. Can you embellish on that?
Yeah, you know, one of the key elements that we feel really differentiates the Girls Academy is our advisory panel. And at its core is every team in the Girls Academy is represented by a team rep. And it's this big pyramid scheme that goes every team across the country, conference liaisons, and then it pyramids up into three national advisors that reported to our board. And these would be three young women, ages from 16 to 19 years of age. And we just use this group to keep our finger on the pulse of everything that's happening within the league, within the landscape. And certainly, Dean, as we think about this kind of watershed moment in women's sports, where we know the protections and the evolution of how we treat the modern athlete is vitally important to their success. Things that we think about, like emotional intelligence, safeguarding and all the guardrails we place in and around the player experience. The voice and the input of the players is so critical to driving our work and keeps us informed on what's important to them and ultimately where we need to be our best selves in supporting their journey.
Now, I see big plans coming for the 25-26 season. It says there are more than 120 member clubs with teams in the U13, U14, U15, U16, U17, and U19 age groups. The member clubs are split into 11 conferences that make up our national footprint. League play begins in August, which we're already into, and culminates with the playoffs and national finals events in June and July. When you take a look at those numbers and how it's broken down, what's the best way to kind of let people understand the Girls Academy a little bit better?
Yeah, so we consider ourselves to be one of the preeminent elite platforms for young women across the US who are interested in that pathway, whether it's to Division One or Two or Three, because you know I'm a big advocate for D2s and D3s as well, and certainly with the changing landscape, I think it's critically important that we remind families and players the opportunities that do exist within the NCAA and the NAI and JUCO. But ultimately, it's providing young girls the opportunity to grow and develop, both in terms of their tactical, technical awareness of the game. But certainly for us, it's about the life skills, right? And the environments that we place them in, which we can certainly grow them, push them to be the best versions of themselves as human beings and certainly as elite players. But given that we're dealing with minors, Dean, we have a big responsibility to ensure that we take the necessary steps to create an environment that is safe, that is holistic by nature, and that nurtures and grows them accordingly.
I want to go over your values because I find all six of them powerful, and I find them to be more than just words, but actually actionable. I think that's a word. And I want to get your, maybe a sentence on each one. Is that okay, Trish?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So we'll start with the first of six of the Girls Academy values, as we're here with Trish Hughes, the commissioner for the Girls Academy. And right off the bat, it says dedication to all possibilities. What does that mean to you?
As I think about the changing landscape right now, that is the youth landscape, and certainly with what's happening within the college game, I don't think it's a one shoe fits all for every child, but I also don't think it's one journey. I think there are multiple pathways for young women within our organization, and I think it's helping these young women figure out where they best fit and educating the families on what that means. I think there are many possibilities that are tied in to certainly their playing pathway. But I think as we think about these young women going into leadership roles within college, in their educational pathway or beyond in careers, we want to make sure that they understand this is just one part of their journey, and we want to give them all the tools they can to use so that when they go on to that next chapter of their journey, whether it's soccer or academics or otherwise, that they have some takeaways from them that from the Girls Academy that their experience has presented them opportunities for personal growth and then to understand that kind of the world is their oyster as they go forward.
Another value of the Girls Academy, development built on a standards-based approach. Can you explain?
Yeah, listen, if anybody's paying attention, you go back and you look at Sally Yates and you look at the shortcomings when it comes to player safety, and we're in a different time, different space now, right? And we're working very closely with the Federation on Safe Soccer. We beta tested that program. We want to make sure that every player in the Girls Academy is grown and developed in a safe and holistic environment where we have the necessary guardrails and protections to ensure that they are given the best care and treatment at all times.
Integrity across all decision making.
Yeah, so one thing I pride myself on as the commissioner of the Girls Academy is I never make decisions in isolation. I work very closely with our board and our executive committee that I report directly to make sure that we are transparent and that we are consistent and fair in every decision that we make, and everything that we do, Dean, is for the players and in the best interests of the players, and ensuring that we use our platform responsibly to kind of serve on our mission, which is this player experience, both in terms of player safety, player education, player development, and then ultimately the growth and development of these young women.
Leadership that guides our athletes to greatness.
At our events, you will see all of our staff in a very front-facing way. While I am the commissioner, I'm only one of a team of leaders within the Girls Academy. And we really pride ourselves on upholding the integrity of our frameworks and our bylaws, and to ensure that when these young women meet us or get to see us out and about at our events, they know that we are present, they know that we are visible, that we are transparent, and that ultimately we are accountable, right? I think that's our responsibility as leaders of the Girls Academy.
Respect for all stakeholders.
That's an easy one for me. Again, these are the culture of excellence, or the expectations that exist within the Girls Academy. We have our frameworks, which is essentially our kind of our working Bible, if you will, that guides us in everything that we do in terms of executing at events, player safety, the standards for game day or events, etc. And we want to make sure that we uphold the integrity of those frameworks and honor the system that is in place that is for the players and by the players. So.
Now, Trish, I went out of order for a reason because I feel like the last core value to me, as a parent of two who experienced youth sports and loved every moment of it, and that is just a three-letter word, fun.
Yeah, so Dean, I have a 10-year-old son and he plays soccer as well, and it's like anything that we do, right? When it stops being fun, it takes the enjoyment out of it. And I think what's most important is that we kind of ground ourselves and recenter ourselves as people charged with providing a soccer experience. While we want to grow and help develop these young people to be able to overcome adversity and understand what safe spaces are and emotional intelligence, at the core of everything we do, there has to be some level of fun and enjoyment for these young people. And to make sure that we are not competing for the World Cup, we are not competing for professional contracts in the moment at 13, 14, 15 years of age. What we're doing is providing them a platform with which to grow and develop and help every child be on the road to their best journey, if that makes sense. But at the core of it all, these are young children. It has to maintain some level of fun and enjoyment for them, or ultimately, we really carry the risk of running people off and it becoming the alternative to fun not being fun, where they just don't want to be a part of it. And then we lose kids to the game. When you come to any of our events, one thing we pride ourselves on is the sense of community. And we want our events and our soccer experience to be not just a transactional soccer experience. We want it to be based in community and a family feel, so that when you come, you're having fun inside the flags and outside of the flags. We can't just correlate winning with fun. It has to be that the overall experience provides some level of enjoyment for the kids, and that's something that we take seriously and we think about every single day.
Trish, while I have you on, I notice right behind you, I see Girls Academy on the left, Girls Academy Aspire on the right. What is that?
We worked very hard over the past 12 months to create a developmental pathway that sits right next to our Girls Academy, what would be our original top tier. We want to create a pathway for young girls who are either in a growth and development mindset whereby they are aspiring up to at the very elite level. We just launched this new tier on August 1. We have 105 clubs across the country in the Aspire League. And we're super proud of this work. It's just a space for clubs to grow and develop with us. If they are a younger club that is evolving, we want to use it as a bedding ground. But certainly for younger players who are growing and developing maybe at a different rate, we want to give them the opportunity to be able to aspire upwards. So we're very proud of this. Our player population now is over 30,000 in totality. So again, it's been a big labor of love for us, but it's our commitment to the player pathway and to make sure that we make the Girls Academy accessible to all players at different levels of the game.
This is a special youth soccer edition of the United Soccer Coaches podcast. A great conversation with Trish Hughes, the Girls Academy Commissioner. The goal of the GA is to empower our players' pursuit of excellence as an athlete and a person. A very noble goal. I love that. And so, with that, Trish, if people heard nothing but what you want to say right now about the power of the Girls Academy, what do you want to leave all the listeners with?
We've worked really hard for the past 2 years just to really understand who we are. It's somewhat of a self-actualization, Dean. And I think, we say we want to be different. We don't want to be the best. We want to be different. We want to be a destination that when folks are looking for an environment with which to bring their clubs or their players, that they feel cared for and they feel recognized and supported. We are a league that listens. We are committed to being open and transparent in our leadership. We take in feedback, and we want our member clubs to have a voice, and the players certainly to have a voice. And that's something that we do every single day. And I think in what is a very complicated landscape, right? It's ensuring that people see us for who we are, that we do care, and we're open to growing forward with our member clubs. I think we've done a great job over the past 2 years of really defining who this organization is. We're committed to the goals of the Federation. And with US Soccer membership, it's really given us a sense of autonomy to be able to align ourselves with the best in the business and to make sure that we show up every day and take the responsibility that we've been given seriously and do the very best for the players and for our member clubs.
126 clubs and growing in the Girls Academy, 12 conferences, 18,000 players plus 1,200 advisory panel members, and Trish Hughes, the commissioner of the Girls Academy, a key part of this month's special edition of the United Soccer Coaches Podcast dedicated to youth soccer. Trish, great to reconnect. Great to see you. Thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, Dean.
We have heard from the ECNL. We have heard from the Girls Academy. Up next, we'll hear from U.S. Youth Soccer, specifically the USYS National League General Manager, Mark Franklin. Mark, after this message.
Unlock your coaching potential this summer with United Soccer Coaches. This summer, take your coaching to the next level with our blended and online educational programs. Whether you're a seasoned coach or just starting out, United Soccer Coaches offers flexible, high-quality courses designed to fit your schedule and your needs. Gain valuable diplomas, dive deep into game tactics, leadership, and player development, and connect with fellow coaches from around the world, all while learning from the best in the game. The summer of growth is here. Don't miss out. Visit UnitedSoccerCoaches.org to learn more and register today. Your coaching journey starts now.
Welcome back to the United Soccer Coaches Podcast, this entire show dedicated to youth soccer. And now we move to the USYS, and specifically the USYS National League, led by their fine general manager, Mark Franklin, who joins me now. Mark, thanks for being on the United Soccer Coaches Podcast.
Thanks for having me, Dean. You know, obviously our paths have crossed a few times, so I appreciate the invite and the chance to talk about all things National League.
Yeah, our paths have crossed, but I want everybody to know a little bit more about you, Mark. And I often ask at the top of interviews for kind of an elevator speech, and I'd like you to keep all the details there. So tell us, like, where you're from, Mark, when you came over to the States, how you got involved with the USYS, maybe if you went to college over here. Give us your story if you can.
Sure, no problem. Well, I've been here since 2001, so I've been in the US for quite a long time, and I've been involved in the soccer industry the entire time. So, I mean, it's been a while, but to just give you the brief oversight, you know, I had a PE teaching degree over in the UK and started doing my coaching badges there, and had some connections over in the US, some friends that were coaching here. So very familiar path than a lot of English guys. So came over here, did some camps, started helping out on some teams, fell in love with it, thought this is great. You know, I'm obviously very passionate about the game, wanted to continue that for a career. So moved over here, spent about 10 years in the club side with various positions, coaching director. And then I started moving a bit more into the administration. So I started my own event company, and I ran several soccer tournament events across the Midwest. Then I got into the college game as well at the same time. So I spent several years at the Division I college level. And then this opportunity with USYS came up about 8 years ago, and it kind of just allowed me to move more into the administration side of things, but stay very closely involved in the game. And I've been working with the National League for the last 8 years.
All right. One kind of follow-up. Tell me about your stops at the college level. And were you assistant coach, head coach? What was your role there?
I was assistant coach at Western Michigan University on the men's side.
Oh, wonderful. That's a big-time program now, too. They do pretty well.
Yeah, over the last few years, Chad Wiseman, the head coach, has done a phenomenal job. You know, they're regularly in the tournaments. They've been a top 25 team. So it's been fun to watch. When I left there, we were just getting into that kind of era where we'd become a Sweet 16 team. We had some players going on into the draft, and it was really fun to see that kind of rise and watching it from afar since. He's done an incredible job, and it obviously helps to keep me involved with the college game, and with my connections that I had there, it helps in the role that I'm in now.
Oh, absolutely, because I'm sure that, and we'll talk about that, about, you know, getting players ready for the next level. As we're here with Mark Franklin, who's the general manager of the USYS National League. So just simply put, when I say USYS National League, and then I say, what is that? What's your answer?
Essentially, we are the only organization that has, in the league, it has club-based and team-based programming. So we are able to offer all of the teams and clubs coming through the state association a pathway into the National League to be able to play regionally with all of our leagues around the country. And we have a network of league managers that operate those different leagues around the country. And then they move into the national side of things with our national events as well.
And I don't believe it's that old, right?
Actually, the National League was founded in 2007.
Oh, no way. Okay.
So, yeah, the National League was founded in 2007. And prior to that, there were actually regional leagues. So the Midwest Regional League, I'm based in the Midwest. I'm based in Michigan. And the MRL started in 2004, the Midwest Regional League. So I was actually, ironically, I was coaching teams back then when the MRL started in 2004. So I've actually been involved in the league for that long as a coach. So it started in the Midwest Regional League, and then there was obviously the Eastern Regional League and the four regions. And then in 2007, the National League was founded. So, and that was based on the top teams in the region going to play in events that were based nationally. So that kind of grew. And then in 2018, which is maybe what you're thinking, was when the National League rebranded to the 13 conferences. So that happened in 2018, which is probably what you're referring to there. So that was just more of a, instead of taking the National League from just the national events, which were fed by the regional events, it now made the umbrella to the National League being the whole brand with all of the different regional leagues filtering in. So that's probably what you're referring to when you say it's relatively new.
Yeah, thanks for that clarification, because I remember doing a special podcast for USYS about that exact moment that you're talking about. As we're here with Mark Franklin, who's the general manager of the USYS National League. And how long have you held that role, Mark?
As a general manager, 3 years now.
3 years now, okay. What's the best part of being the general manager of the USYS National League, and what's the biggest challenge of being the general manager of the USYS National League?
Well, to be honest, I love my job, Dean. Anytime you can watch kids playing the sport is great for me. And a lot of people ask me, why do I do this? You know, because obviously there's a lot of work. I mean, we have 3,500 teams in the league. You know, it is a lot of work. But when we get to our national events and we get to see the kids playing, and I think our staff do an incredible job at our events as well, and you see the look on kids' faces, it makes it all worthwhile, you know, all of the hard work. So that's what I really, really enjoy about it. You know, the challenges is the ecosystem right now. And you speak to any league director and they'll tell you the same thing. You know, it's constantly growing. It's constantly getting more fractured. As I mentioned, we do have 3,500 teams that are playing in this league. And I think sometimes that goes a little bit unnoticed, how big we are and how many teams that we have, because so much attention is paid to the very top. And at the very top of our game, those leagues that do that do a very, very, very good job. And our challenge is making sure that we can provide a place for all of the teams coming through, because USYS is a member services organization. So we have to be able to assist our members. And I think sometimes the perception is that we're competing against our members, which is absolutely not the case. And you speak to any of our league managers that report to me around the country, and they'll be the first to tell you that we need to be able to provide that link. So the challenges from the top are all of the new leagues that are created all of the time. The challenges from the entry level is making sure that we work with our state associations, not only to just provide an option for those top teams coming out, but to also help the state associations be able to facilitate their leagues and their affiliated leagues. And that's the challenge. So we have the challenge on both sides.
Well said, as we're here with Mark Franklin, the general manager of the USYS National League. And you mentioned the state associations, and I've been around long enough. I started with U.S. soccer in 1989 to realize that the state associations do indeed make a difference. And I think the USYS is really responsible for making sure they do make a difference. Can you dive a little bit deeper into that and how you work with the different state associations? I feel like most states have one. There's a couple states that have a couple, right?
Yeah. So from the 54 states, As you said, some of the states are split into two, you know, like a Texas North and a Texas South, Cal North and Cal South. So there's 54 state associations. And from those 54 state associations, we have teams currently coming from 46 of them. So within the National League, 46 of those 54 states have teams that are within the National League. You know, and some of them are hard because they're in areas like Hawaii, Montana, you know, North Dakota, Wyoming, states like that. You know, it's difficult for them because of the travel needed, and there's not enough clubs around there. So that is difficult to be able to bring in the teams from there. But, you know, ultimately, and I've been asked this question a few times, how does the state associations fit in when it comes to the league? But it's really how do we work closer with the state associations to get the message through to the parents? So if you take the Heartland League, obviously United Soccer Coaches is based in Kansas, right? Heartland League is one of the biggest leagues in the country. It's a state affiliated league. Kansas Youth Soccer doesn't have its own state league. It doesn't run a state league. So they have an affiliated league, and the Heartland League is huge. Now, I bet if you ask most parents that are playing at U9, U10, U11, what the pathway is, they couldn't tell you. They wouldn't have any idea. So we need to be able to, or they will, they'll be able to say MLS Next, ECNL, Girls Academy. That's the best of the best that are playing at those top ones. And I know they've got other tiers as well within that. But what we need to do with USYS is be able to work closely with the state associations to be able to explain what a pathway is. What does that look like for that U9, U10 player that's playing in the Heartland League if they progress through the divisions? Because it's a fantastic league. It's a huge league. I think they have about 3,000 teams just in the Heartland League because they have multiple divisions. But what does that mean if you get to the top of that USYS sanctioned league? Where can you go to there within USYS? And I even see it, like I'm a parent now, so I'm learning a lot. I'm a soccer dad, you know, and a few years ago, if you could have thought I would be a soccer dad, you know, I'd laugh at you. But here I am sat on the sidelines. I sit by the corner flag with my feet up. I try not to talk to anyone. I try and keep myself to myself and I just watch. But a few of the parents have clocked on what I do for a living now. So now, of course, they're gravitating towards me. And they're asking me these questions. And the club that my kids play in is MLS Next and GA. And my daughter and my son, they love the game, probably not the best players. And they're probably falling in that second tier, but they love it and they have a great time. These parents, they have no idea what that might look like in the state league, in the local leagues. So if they don't make it to that MLS Next team and they don't make it to that GA team, where do they go? And the parents have no idea. They're absolutely clueless. So it comes back to what I'm saying about the education and working with the state associations to make sure we do a better job of getting the message out of what we actually do and what we can provide.
Update me on how USYS interacts with US soccer.
We're working very, very closely with US soccer. You know, there's no question about that. And I was very privileged to be put on the ecosystem review recently that was led by US Soccer. And I was representing USYS and the National League on those calls. And it was very interesting because, you know, right at the start, they kind of asked everyone. And on that ecosystem review, you had league leaders and you had state association leaders. And they kind of asked everybody, you know, what would you do with a hierarchy of leagues? Where would you place them? And the answers were all over the place. You know, everybody's going to gravitate towards their league and where they think they fit in. And for the most part, everybody was honest on that. But it's the people that aren't involved in the leagues, their responses. And it was all over the map. You know, you could turn that pyramid upside down three or four different times. And it really showed to me that there is really no clear lineation on that and how it's structured. And I think US Soccer are really trying to take a deep dive into that and see what that really looks like for player development, for team and club development. So I do think that we do work closely with US Soccer, and we will continue to do that because we all want what's best for the game. And at the end of the day, and this is a very idealistic opinion, but we would love to have a structure where you had team-based leagues, you know, city-based leagues, sorry, leading into district leagues, regional leagues, state leagues. That's how it should be, because you want as little travel as possible while still getting a competitive balance. And I think US Soccer would love to have that, but there's a long, long way to go.
Two more questions with the very entertaining Mark Franklin, who is the USYS National League General Manager. And they're both going to be fill-in-the-blank questions. And this one will go like this. My name is Mark Franklin. I am the General Manager for the USYS National League. And I love my job because?
I love it because I get to work in the game. I mean, this game has treated me very, very well. It really does, has. And I just love being able to go out and when we're at our events, seeing the kids out there and all of the politics and everything else goes away. In that moment, when I'm walking around the fields, and I mentioned earlier, we have a tremendous staff that work for the National League Department, and they're all very passionate about their jobs. And I trust them to do their jobs. And I can go out and I can just sit out there on a golf cart or walk around the fields and watch kids enjoying the sport that they love. There's nothing better for me.
Last question. There's been a longstanding relationship, partnership, association with United Soccer Coaches, particularly during convention time. This is the United Soccer Coaches podcast. So to Mark Franklin, the relationship with the United Soccer Coaches means what?
Well, obviously, we have a big presence there, as you know. We always do. So the convention is something that is on everybody's calendar, and they're always looking at it. You know, whenever you see the dates and the locations, you're trying to figure out where you are. We've had some issues in the past because, unfortunately, we've conflicted with it with some events. So we try really, really hard not to do that anymore. It's very important that we're there. And as you know, when we get in there, there's a huge presence. We have our branding up everywhere because we feel like the partnership is so valuable. And it's such a great networking experience. You know, we can go there and we can meet with other people. We can see different ideas. And I'm very much, I like to learn what other people are doing as well. So I'll always go into any of the sessions and the talks that have been led by other leagues. I feel it's extremely valuable. The same as I do when I go to their events as well. I like going to other people's events and seeing what they do. It's the same as the convention. You can learn so much. And of course, the networking things that people always talk about, the socials and everything else that goes in around it. And that's all great too. But just to be able to be there with all of our staff and bring everyone in together, I think it's a great opportunity.
Mark Franklin, the general manager of the USYS National League. Great interview, great energy. Love that you're in Michigan. Where are you in Michigan?
Grand Rapids, on the west side.
Yeah, that's a great place. I'm originally from Ohio, but we would always vacation up near Traverse City in Michigan. Michigan's a hidden gem all the way across, including Grand Rapids, which is a great town as well. Mark, thanks so much for being on the United Soccer Coaches podcast. I enjoyed it and hope you did.
Yes, Dean, always great talking to you, so I appreciate you having me on.
All right, next we move to U.S. Club Soccer and talk to their recently hired, it was back in January, technical director after he had spent some time with FIFA and had done so many great things in the game. Ross Pauley, the technical director for U.S. Club Soccer, is around the corner.
Calling all soccer coaches, players, and fans. Get ready for the ultimate soccer experience as we celebrate 50 years of the United Soccer Coaches Convention in Philadelphia, PA, January 14th to 17th, 2026. This is the can't-miss event of the year where education, innovation, and the passion for the game come together in one incredible location. Whether you're a coach looking to level up or a business professional in the soccer world, this convention has something for you. We're talking about world-class educational sessions led by top experts in the game, a full exhibit hall showcasing the latest in soccer gear, technology, and the business of soccer, and so much more. You'll have the chance to network, discover new trends, and experience everything the soccer world has to offer. Celebrate 50 years of growth, achievement, and community in Philadelphia. Join us January 14th to 17th, 2026 in Philadelphia, PA for the United Soccer Coaches Convention. Visit UnitedSoccerCoachesConvention.com to register now. See you in Philly.
Welcome back to the United Soccer Coaches podcast, this show dedicated entirely to youth soccer as we cover everything there is to know about youth soccer, and that includes U.S. Club Soccer, who back on January 8th proudly announced the hiring of Ross Pauley as their technical director. Ross Pauley comes to U.S. Club Soccer with a range of valuable experience, most recently as FIFA talent coach. Prior to that, he was the head women's soccer coach for Creighton University. He was also executive director and technical director of Arlington Soccer Academy in Tennessee. His coaching and executive experience followed a 9-year playing career in MLS, during which he played for the Colorado Rapids, the Metro Stars, and the Columbus Crew. He was also a member of U.S. Soccer's U-17 and U-20 national teams. Ross Pauley will lead U.S. Club Soccer's talent identification and player development initiatives, including the ID2 program and player development program known as PDP. Established in 2004, the ID2 program is a leader in player identification and development as it provides opportunities for elite athletes to be identified, developed, and scouted for inclusion in U.S. Soccer's youth national team programming. And with that, I welcome in one of my favorites. A lot of you know that I was the voice of the Rapids for the first 3 years and got to call Ross Pauley in action. One of my favorite players, one of my favorite people, and delighted that he's on this special youth soccer edition of the United Soccer Coaches podcast. Back then, we called him Powder. Today, we call him Ross Pauley. Ross, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Dean. That was really nice. Good intro. That's a lot of information. But no, I appreciate you, Dean, very much. I'm happy to be on the show.
Well, we need to remind people as we get into the ID program, the reason we called you Powder was back then you dyed your hair like snow white, white. I mean, it was really white and it stood out and it was awesome, you know, and I think you had fun doing it.
It was something that I did in college at Creighton University. And when we were going on a run and we ended up going to the Final Four, and it was something that just stuck with me and I had fun with it. And it was fun taking it into the pro environment too. And I look back on some of the videos and I really look like Q-Tip running around out there, but it was a good idea back then, and I'm back on it. And yeah, I'd probably do it again.
Now, remind me, I feel like you joined the team in our second year, 1997. Do I have that right?
Yeah, you're correct. That was my first year, 1997. And that was a special year too, if you remember. A lot of fun.
Yeah, it was beyond special. And I didn't mean to interrupt you as we have a little bit of a delay, but we went from worst to almost first. And you were a key part of it. You know, and we acquired Peter Vermees, who came in with his leadership. He was named the Defender of the Year. This was a guy who played forward in the 90 World Cup. We had Steve Chichu back there. We had both the Henderson brothers. We had Marcelo Balboa. We had David Patino. We had you. We had Paul Bravo. That was a pretty loaded team, right? Adrian Paz.
It really was. It was a special year because, like you said, we struggled for the majority part of the year, especially the first part of the year. And that's the beauty of our game. When you get a good group of guys together that all of a sudden start clicking on all cylinders. We got a few late game winners, a couple really special ones with Marcelo Balboa, bicycle kick, and or Chris Henderson, another amazing goal at the very end of a game, and going on a run and ended up playing DC United in the final, which was a very good game also. But yeah, those are memories that I won't ever forget. And those are all some really good guys, very talented guys to play with, and some good friends of mine now.
Yeah, I've called a lot of games, and I think calling that semifinal win over Dallas will still go down as one of my favorite, mostly because the locker room celebration was the kind of situation you dream of. But let's move to what you're doing now with U.S. Club Soccer as you come on as the technical director. I have all the time in the world for Mike Cullina. I think he's a brilliant man, and I feel like he's approached his role with U.S. Club Soccer from a very high level, knowing that you can only be as good as the people around you, and he found somebody special in you. Please tell me you kind of feel the same way about Mike's leadership and also what U.S. Club Soccer stands for.
Yeah, absolutely. When this job popped up, I was currently with FIFA working in the talent ID space. And I always wanted to come back to the U.S. and use my expertise in that area. And when this opportunity popped up, I looked into it, and to have an influence in our country with talent ID and player development is something I was very interested in. But I even got more interested in after I spoke to Mike. Mike's leadership and passion behind ID2 and what it's done in the past is really incredible, the influence that it's had, but even more so his vision of what we can do in this space moving forward. And I truly believe, again, that talent is everywhere and opportunity is not. And I can, and ID2 can have that impact in this space. And we are. Every great player's journey begins with someone believing in their potential. And me, myself, as a player, I look back on the people that looked at me and thought of me and are thought I had the potential to play at a high level. And then I got an opportunity to express that and move forward. And that's what ID2 can do in our country. Our country's full of talented players who really don't or didn't have the fortune of having someone who placed their faith in them and provide the opportunity. And ID2 will find this talent, ignite that talent, and create pathways for the talent to reach their potential. It's been incredible just in the 3 months that we've been actually working with the Talent ID program in the youth space, and the amount of talent that we've found and seen is really impressive. And I just look forward to what we can do in the future.
I heard you on Breaking the Line, the ECNL podcast, and I felt like I walked away with the impression that ID2 is now on steroids, for lack of a better word. It's elevated. You know, remind me about that discussion you had with Christian Labors and Doug Bracken about what you're doing with the ECNL, for instance.
Just looking at where we are right now and just explain what the main goals into this first cycle is. We are focused on the youth 2012s, boys and girls. And we want to find that talent. We want to find talent that's not given the opportunity right now. And the way you do that is you really build a massive scouting network. And that's where I've been really focused, is building the scouting network to expand our reach and widen the network, or widen the pool. And so that's been a big focus of mine. And we're all the way up to around 70 plus scouts with ID2. And we didn't have any as we were moving into this first year. So the first part is making sure that we have a diverse, experienced, educated scouting network that understands what we're looking for in the U14 age group. And it's been unbelievable, the impact or the work that we've done so far. I looked at the numbers of what we've done just since July to now. Is our scouts have seen and evaluated in person over 10,000, around 10,000 players. And that's through going to established events. That's through our new programming with ECNL, with the Spotlight Games. And that's through our network scouts scouting in their local environments. It is on steroids, but it's not even near where it's going to get to, because we're in the process of really building this program to be a really robust scouting network to expand our reach, widen the pool. And then in our programming, it's all about strengthening the pool. So any programming that we have, we'll be looking at bringing in all the players, the best with best, and are in a best with best environment, to where these players can learn and grow and experience a high level camp with high level coaches and progress in their pathway, because these kids are young. They're very young, so it's really important that we, this is a long-term process. This is a process where we're building the pool, the depth charts, and we're monitoring and tracking these players over time while we bring them into our events, which is part of the pathway. When you bring players in, they learn in a best with best environment. They learn how to deal with challenges. They learn how to have a different role, how to have to play a different position. They have to learn the ups and downs of the game, because the development, every player is different. Every player develops at different rates, and every player learns in different ways and goes back to different environments. So ID2 has to be a long-term process, and that's what we're building.
So knowing it's a long-term process, 10 years from now, for Ross Pauley, how would you define success?
Well, I mean, you got to look at the players that were impacted with the platform of ID2. We've scouted close to 10,000 players. And then within our depth charts right now, we have about 219 in our depth charts. What would define success is any of the players that we've found and gone through ID2 have progressed in the pathway to become a youth national team player, to progress to reach their highest potential, which could be pro, which could be college. There's a lot of opportunity. You just have to define what a high level is. And the highest level, obviously, is the senior national team playing in the World Cup. The goal, obviously, is for ID2 to be able to find players, develop players, to progress in the pathway to eventually play in a World Cup. But there's a lot that happens in a pathway before that. So the key for ID2 is to treat players holistically, to meet them where they are, to help them understand what are the key qualities that they need to be able to progress in the game, and help them understand what the benchmarks are, to understand what are they trying to achieve. It's important that we look at these players anytime that they're with us in our programming, and help them develop their unique talent. Each one of these players are unique, and they develop in at different rates, but our goal is to help them become the unique talent that they are, and hopefully have a long career in the game, on the boys' side, girls' side, both.
Just three more questions for Ross Pauley. He is the technical director for U.S. Club Soccer and spearheading the ID2 program. Now, Ross, I find it fascinating that you had some time with FIFA. Can you share with me kind of your biggest takeaway from that experience?
It's kind of where I got my new tagline, talent is everywhere, opportunity is not. FIFA's main project was to give every talent a chance. And so in the same sense, it really means the same thing. But what did I take from FIFA? There is talent in all areas, and it's all about finding that talent and giving them the opportunity. And it's not just giving them an opportunity, it's giving them the right opportunity. And the people that I got exposed to in FIFA, as leaders in this space, talent ID and player development, like in Arsene Wenger was the head of what I did in FIFA. And his whole mission was understanding that everybody's unique. How can we influence whatever culture it's in, whatever country you're in, finding the talent and making sure that that talent is nurtured, to become the best talent that that individual can be. And then in the end, influencing the culture behind the beautiful game of football. The game of football just unites people. The purpose behind developing people was something that really stuck with me with FIFA, because that, or with as being a FIFA talent coach, because that really was what I saw from everybody that was involved in the FIFA TDS, was to have that influence through the game, to help a child or a person become their best and reach their full potential. So in the end, it was just an incredible group of people. I learned so much from some really high-level technical directors, talent ID experts, and I've taken that all into the current job that I have. And again, my goal with ID2 is do the same, is to really ensure that we are widening the pool in the US, which we have a large pool, but making sure that we are giving the opportunity, or providing the opportunity, for these high-level talented boys and girls to develop and progress in their own unique pathway.
Great to have Ross Pauley, the technical director for U.S. Club Soccer, on this very special youth soccer edition of the United Soccer Coaches podcast. Just two more questions for you, Ross Pauley, and they're fill in the blanks. And this one will be me. You know, you don't talk like this, but I'm going to say it as if you do. And that is, my name's Ross Pauley. I was one hell of a player in college, a great pro career, and I was a really good coach as well. Then had a great opportunity to move up in the executive frame. And I'm really happy to be the technical director for U.S. Club Soccer because.
the purpose that it has. One of my missions in life is to really use the talents and gifts and experiences that I had to help bring the best out of others. And in the end, talent ID is seeing potential in somebody and helping them understand who they are, the talent that they have, and helping develop into the best unique person that they can be. So a perfect job for me.
Finally, this is the United Soccer Coaches Podcast. You have been a coach. You've had different roles. Obviously, the association, you know, took a little hit last year, but they're back. They're going to be in Philadelphia for the convention. So the last question is, when you think about how United Soccer Coaches has helped you along the way, Ross, can you put that into words for me, please?
It's all about relationships. When you go to events like that, you reconnect with the people you haven't seen in a long time. You build relationships with key people that are you can partner with in your mission or area of the game you're in. For me, it's all about going to an environment like that and building the relationships, reconnecting with people, and moving forward with the game together.
I'm so glad that I get to continue to reconnect with you periodically, Ross. I'm really proud of you. Really enjoyed the way you treated me. And I think you knew that I respected your game. And more importantly, I respected you as a person. So I feel like everything you're doing, you've earned. My parents always said, good things happen to good people. You're good people, Ross Pauley. Thanks for being on the United Soccer Coaches Podcast.
Dean, thank you very much. Much respect to you and all you do.
Right back at you, Ross, and much respect to Felicity Day as well, as she is taking the lead on the Red Card Cancer, as October is Cancer Awareness Month, and Felicity Day will help us Red Card Cancer after this message.
Are you a soccer coach looking to take your game to the next level? Whether you're just starting out or you're seasoned pro, United Soccer Coaches has everything you need to succeed. As a member, you'll enjoy discounted education resources to improve your skills, connect with coaches' communities across the country, and gain access to our prestigious awards programming. Plus, you'll have the chance to attend our annual convention, an event you don't want to miss out on. Need extra protection? We've got you covered with general liability insurance, and you'll also enjoy exclusive discounts and opportunities from our trusted partners. Join United Soccer Coaches today and be part of a team that's dedicated to helping you grow as a coach and a leader. Sign up now at unitedsoccercoaches.org. Elevate your coaching. Elevate your game.
Welcome back to this very special youth soccer edition of United Soccer Coaches, where we also can pivot and talk about things that are important, things that are timely. United Soccer Coaches is partnering with Red Card Cancer and the American Cancer Society to unite the soccer community in fighting cancer. The initiative encourages coaches, players, and fans to get involved through fundraising, hosting games, and raising awareness. You can find more information or get involved by visiting the linked resources, which include donation links and contact information for support, by just Googling Red Card Cancer. How to get involved? Well, you can host a Red Card Cancer game, organize a game where all proceeds go toward the cause. You can fundraise, raise money with your team or club through various activities. You can spread awareness, educate others about the cause on and off the field, make a donation. You can donate directly to the cause online. Contact for support. If you need day materials or support, you can email Brian.Casalinova, that's Casalinova at cancer.org, or Kelly, Kelly, dot Hurley, Hurley at cancer.org. United Soccer Coaches' role in all of this, and by the way, it is Cancer Awareness Month this month in October, so this is timely, but United Soccer Coaches is using its platform to promote the partnership with Red Card Cancer and the American Cancer Society. They have featured clubs like Steel United that have successfully raised more than $5,000 for the cause. The partnership aids to involve the entire soccer community in the fight against cancer. And it's kind of great because one of our board members and somebody that's been involved with United Soccer Coaches coaching education for such a long time, and everybody loves her. We're talking about Felicity Day, and we welcome in
Felicity Day to the United Soccer Coaches Podcast. Great to see you, Felicity.
Thanks for having me, Dean. Appreciate the opportunity.
You know, there's been a lot of progress made on cancer and cancer research, but, you know, we can never stop with cancer awareness. And we do want to give it an official red card and eliminate it, send it to the showers, as they say, Felicity Day. Just talk about why this is so important to you.
Yeah. So, you know, I think it's not only important to me, it's important as an organization, you know, with United Soccer Coaches being such a large organization of coaches. And it was really important to the board. And I think it was a responsibility to the members that, you know, we decided to partner with Red Card Cancer and American Cancer Society to start this initiative. This is the first time that we've had this kind of partnership to help both raise awareness and also to be a conduit for those teams and coaches and members that may want to raise funds for American Cancer Society, but don't necessarily know how to do that. This partnership has allowed our coaches to partner themselves with Red Card Cancer, whether it's through hosting a game, whether it's simply, you know, by having a team fundraiser, whatever it might be. So we felt that was an important aspect of our association that we weren't taking advantage of. So we're really happy that we were able to kick this off in October.
So important. And I want to cling on to the words you just used, and that is how do they do it? So people are hearing this interview right now. They're realizing, if they hadn't already, that it's Cancer Awareness Month. Now they realize that United Soccer Coaches is part of the Red Card to Cancer. If people want to get involved, teams want to get involved, coaches want to get involved, can you direct them, Felicity Day?
Yes. So we have both on the United Soccer website, through newsletters, direct email, through our social media. There has been an email to someone that does work with American Cancer Society, and he is our go-to person. His name is Brian Casalanova. He's been very helpful organizing and helping to organize and helping to brainstorm with our fellow member coaches on how exactly they can get involved with the fight against cancer. And whether, again, it's hosting a game, an organization that I work with, we ran a tournament where our players were asked to be sponsored by their family, their grandparents, for every goal that was scored. And then, you know, at the end, that money was then tallied up and collected. And, you know, we had success with that. We were able to raise over $5,000 at Still United for the Red Card Cancer and American Cancer Society. So, but there is that conduit. Brian is a great person to brainstorm with if you're just at a loss. You want to do it, but you're just not sure how to go about doing it.
If I just Googled Red Card Cancer, would it direct me somewhere, like to a link? Is it that simple?
Yep, you can Google Red Card Cancer. There is a QR code as well, both in our soccer journal, that takes you directly to a page for donations. And that is a QR code that all coaches can use. So coaches can simply take that QR code and use it, again, as a direct donation link.
Felicity Day, you're already known as a person that gives so much. I mean, you've given so much to coaching education. We've talked about that before. And now, obviously, this important cause. I have to ask you, have you or your family been affected by cancer in some way, Felicity Day?
You know, I've been fortunate that I haven't personally. However, I know of many people who have. And that's why, you know, I just feel it's so important to give back to those, you know, that are going through this struggle, and soccer is a great vehicle in which to do so.
So that is truly your DNA, right? I mean, you are about giving back and helping people and propping them up and making them better? Obviously, that's meant as a compliment, but also I kind of want to know when you knew that you kind of had those qualities and you wanted to exercise them.
Oh, that's a good question. You know, I think always just being part of the game, it's something I grew up with. And, you know, it's a passion that continues, right? As you know, and you have your career in soccer. And so it's that continued passion to not only spread the love of the game, but also show how through our game we can make a conscious effort to contribute to the different organizations that need, you know, that need help.
October is Cancer Awareness Month. We want to put a red card to cancer. We encourage you to Google red card cancer and get going and kind of heading up that partnership now with United Soccer Coaches is Felicity Day. Felicity, you also stood up and said, yeah, I will be on the board of directors right at a time when there was a little bit of turmoil. And talk about why you felt like that was important as well.
Yeah, you know, United Soccer Coaches has always been a huge part of my life and my coaching journey, my coaching education journey, and, you know, just started over 30 years ago, let's say, when I was recognized as an All-American. So it's such an important organization to me, and I just felt it was time and there was an opportunity for me to jump in, I think, when the organization needed it most. And it was something that, you know, I kind of pride myself on things that I'm a part of and making sure that they're successful. So I wanted to try to bring my efforts as well as obviously those everyone on the board and just to continue the United Soccer Coaches, you know, for those to come.
Folks, let me tell you, if you could see Felicity today, you wouldn't believe the over 30 years ago. I can tell you that as she looks like she might be 30 as well. But with that, Felicity Day, just in case people don't know you, I've done this to you before, but give us your elevator speech. Where'd you grow up? Where'd you go to college? How did you get involved with United Soccer Coaches, if you don't mind?
Yeah, so I grew up in Massachusetts. I was a youth, club, high school, college coach throughout the years. Went to University of Mary Washington and played soccer there before heading to England, played for Arsenal for a year. But I was introduced through the All-American Awards. That's a big part of our association. And then started taking education courses while I was in college and continued along the education path, which was such an important part of my journey. Made me the coach I am today. That journey continues for sure. And I'm on the education staff and, you know, we're continuing the education for up and coming coaches.
All right. We'll end with a couple fill in the blank questions. And this one should be fun for you. My name's Felicity Day, and I want a red card cancer with this partnership with the American Cancer Society because
I feel it's important for people to recognize that soccer is a vehicle in which to do good.
Very good. And then finally, I am proud to do anything I can for United Soccer Coaches. And you might be one of the best examples of that because
I'm a tried and true and loyal member and have been and will continue to be to try to continue to make this organization one that is going to continue to be a rock for our coaches in the soccer community.
I appreciate the way you process that answer with care, Felicity Day. So again, Google red card cancer. That'll get you rolling. And like you said, whether it's $5 or $5,000 or $50,000, every dollar helps as we try to red card cancer all the way home, right?
Absolutely. Any amount is a great amount.
All right, Felicity Day, thanks so much for spreading this important message during Cancer Awareness Month on the United Soccer Coaches podcast.
Thank you so much, Dean. Thanks for helping us spread the word.
That's what we try to do, including spreading the word about youth soccer in this country as part of our youth soccer edition of the United Soccer Coaches podcast. I want to thank Christian, Trish, Mark, Ross, and Felicity. Also want to thank Sarah Wilbur, who does great work with the association, and my producer, Colin Thrash. For each and every one of them and all of you, I'm Dean Linke. We'll see you in a month for another edition of the United Soccer Coaches Podcast.
Thanks for listening to the United Soccer Coaches Podcast with Dean Linke. If you have a guest you want featured on the United Soccer Coaches Podcast, please reach out to Sarah Wilbur with suggestions, questions, and input. Her email is swilbur@unitedsoccercoaches.org. That is swilbur@unitedsoccercoaches.org. In addition, if you have a company that would like to sponsor the podcast or run advertisements in the show, please reach out to partners@unitedsoccercoaches.org. That's partners@unitedsoccercoaches.org.